Accession number 31467, Mr. Tom Handley, Real 5. Now, the next thing is you go to 5, Advanced Flying Unit, Turnhill in Shropshire, where you arrive in December after that period in, you know, holding camp. What's happening there? That's where you're getting quite near the end of your training, in a sense. What do you remember about that?
I don't remember that at all. I remember coming home on leave after I'd been to America, and I pleased my mother very much, because before I left America, I went into a grocery shop and I bought pounds of raisins and sultanas and other things that were unobtainable in this country. And when I got these two great kit bags, the top layers of each of them contained dried fruit, which my mother hadn't seen for 2 or 3 years. And then I had, as far as I can remember, I thought our next port of call was somewhere in Scotland.
Well, in your thing, it's definitely Turnhill, where you're flying Masters. Master what? Master 3 looks like...
Master 3.
And then the Master 1. And you're there. You're there until February. And that's where you do the link trainer as well. And then in February you go to Teeling in Scotland.
So
do you remember?
I can't remember that Turnhill
at all.
No, I can't. I remember flying Masters.
Well, you flew the Master at the other one as well. So. You're flying. Oh,
it's
hang
mainly
on.
Because it's a. It's
no,
a
hang on. No, no, you're not. You're flying the Hurricane. You only fly the Master once or twice at Teeling. Yeah. So what do you remember of the Master then? Yeah, I mean, just so we can pick up on what it is.
It's as near as you could get to a fighter aircraft with two seats. That's the essential thing. They're all two-seaters. And until you could find your way around the skies pretty quickly in one as well. And
it was fast moving, was it?
Oh yes, with quite a powerful radial engine. And we went it was the nearest thing you could get to a fighter without having the instructor with you, because when we got to the Hurricane you were on your own from the very first word of go.
Well, let's move on to that, because you don't remember that. Now, that the next period is flying the Hurricanes. It's with 56 Operational Training Unit at Teeling.
That's right.
It's near Dundee in Scotland. Now, what's an Operational Training Unit for? This is where you, it's pretty
getting ready to get on to a squadron, getting ready for flying on a squadron, being useful.
And what was it like up at Teeling?
Cold.
It's February when you got there.
Yes, cold and wet. But the food was very plain, but we all felt very healthy on it. It hadn't been mucked about with, is my phrase, but it was plain boiled this and plain boiled that, you know, and we ate it because it filled us up.
And what was your accommodation like there?
I think we survived in Nissen huts, which were quite cold at night. Of course, there's only an inch of metal between you and the outside, and there used to be stoves in the middle of the room, which used to glow a pleasant red at night when everything else was turned off. But it was our effort to stay alive, I suppose.
Now tell me about flying the Hurricane. It's Hurricane 1.
Yes.
Mark 1. What is it like to fly the Hurricane? Because it's a sort of thing that people now fantasize about but can't do, you know, much.
No.
So what was it like then?
Well, you got into it and you were the only one to take it off. If it's whatever was going to happen, you had to originate it. And, well, we just opened the throttle and it good to feel the Rolls-Royce Merlin pick up and take you on into the air. And it was a very easy aeroplane to fly.
What was it like to fly? Give us an idea of what its capabilities, and possibly if there are any drawbacks, what was good about it, what was bad about it?
No, it was a very good tempered aircraft because it came from a long line of other good tempered aircraft by, what was his name? Sidney Cam. All the other, there have been so many other Hawker aircraft before the war that this was just had the top wing taken off and the bottom wing made a bit bigger, and that gave and a retractable undercarriage fitted. And it had 8 guns when you had to fire them, which was very pleasing.
Machine guns or cannons?
They were machine guns, and they were buried in the wings.
And what was its flying capabilities like?
I have very fond memories of the Hurricane.
In what way?
Because it seemed to be the pinnacle of manoeuvrability for a monoplane. You can't compete with a biplane, but then you don't need to, because most of the opposition that we were going to come in contact with would be monoplanes, ME-109s.
So they'd have a biplane was more manoeuvrable, but you weren't fighting biplanes. So.
No. Totally different war. The moment the biplanes went out, it was a different kettle of fish altogether. And even when we got on to the Typhoons later on, they were superior in speed, but not in manoeuvrability.
So
everything became that much bigger. I did one loop all the time I was flying a Typhoon. I did one loop.
That's the Typhoon. Stick to the Hurricane for the minute.
The Hurricane was, you could do all the things you've been taught to do. All the manoeuvres, all the lazy eights and all that sort of thing. And all the time you were gaining confidence in what you were doing. You gained confidence very quickly because you had to get into the plane and fly it yourself.
Any problems with the Hurricane? Or just things that are difficult?
No, I had my first mishap in that plane. I had a puncture. And I got a right royal rollicking for trying to move an aircraft that had a puncture.
What do you mean?
I landed and I was taxiing, and then there was a loud bang, and that side went down a bit.
While you were taxiing, not while you were landing?
Oh, no. I'd landed and I was taxiing, and I knew that if I stuck where I was, everybody behind me, we were all quite close up, would be inconvenienced. I tried to move the thing, and Chiefy, the chief...
Instructor?
No, not instructor, the ground crew, the chief ground crew man, on which we depended so much, he gave me a right rollicking, although I hadn't done much wrong. I just tried to move the thing out of the way, but I couldn't do it, because the wheel was being damaged by my trying to move it.
Now, what do you remember? So you flew all the exercises, the aerobatic things. Anything else you were learning there in the Hurricane? You seem to have been up quite a lot in it, flying.
Yes. I quite enjoyed it. And time went on, and the days got longer. We were able to see what we were doing more, able to see the countryside more. And then suddenly we were finished with it.
Well, there's a couple of things in there. If I just check some things that I don't understand at all. One of them is section attacks and dummy rhubarb. No, you lost me there. What's a dummy rhubarb?
A section attack means to say you fly with another person, and it had gone down from threes to twos.
You practice flying in pairs then?
Flying in pairs, and you learn something called crossover turns. That's where if you're flying along with your partner and you'd be about 100 yards apart, and we want to turn that way, you turn, and it was easier to allow the plane to get up. I'd cross over his room, so one side, one minute I'd be looking at his port side, and the next minute I'd be looking at his starboard side.
Now, what's this dummy rhubarb?
A rhubarb was a technical name for a type of almost a tip and run raid. Like the Germans used to come over, and they'd come over and they'd drop a bomb and then they'd fly away again. But we did the same sort of thing. Make an attack on a building or something like that, or a gas holder in another town somewhere, something like that. We'd make an attack on that. We'd do it in different ways. So it was not a real rhubarb, it was a dummy.
And there's squadron formation. That's just...
Well, yeah, it's
just what it says.
Just being... It's a matter of getting used to being in the air with a lot of other people close to you. So you learn to hold your position.
But more than, with a lot of you.
Yes.
You find that difficult? I presume you didn't like that much.
No, I didn't like close formation, but I had to put up with it.
And the other thing it mentioned is aerobatics and dogfighting. Was that any different now you're in a real fighter?
No, it was nothing different from what we'd done before, but except that you originated the manoeuvres.
Now, so you're there for until April, basically. So you're there 2 months, best part of 2 months, a bit more,
yes.
Perhaps.
Yes,
43, I just say the year, just to, you know, so that we know where we are, people listening.
In 1943 now, aren't we?
Yeah, 1943, yeah. April 43. Now, anything else about your time there at Teeling?
I can't think of anything. I can't really think of anything. I can't remember anything special.
So the next thing then is you go to 257 Squadron, but just for a month. At Wormwell.
Wormwell,
sorry. It is warm, yes, it's me.
Wormwell.
Now, Wormwell, where is that?
In Dorset.
Now, what is this posting for?
I guess that was what we'd all been aiming at all the time, is to be posted to a squadron. And the first squadron I went to was to Wormwell.
And that was 257 Squadron?
Yes, that now, were equipped with Typhooners.
Now, when you get there, you don't seem to be flying.
No.
You go on recces, and you're in the Hurricane, actually, and the Magister with 257.
Yes.
So what's going on if they've got Typhoons? Why are you in
there? They, for some technical reason, had got too many pilots. And they didn't really want us. But on the same aerodrome... There was a squadron called 263.
Hang on. So that's where you why you go to them.
Yes.
Now, so what were you doing when you got to Wormwell with 257?
With 257, to continue our flying experience, we were told we could fly anything except the Typhoons. So
you're on recce flights from the look of things.
Yes, reconnaissance flights. That means. Going up to a great height and viewing France from a distance. Nothing really dangerous.
And they were in the Hurricane?
They were in Hurricanes, yes.
And did anything happen on these reconnaissance flights?
No.
How did you... I mean, they just got too many pilots. Was that...
At that time, yes. And eventually we've moved off. And I was posted then to the other squadron that was at Wormwell, 263 Squadron. And they were flying a strange aeroplane called a Whirlwind.
Now, tell me about the Whirlwind. What was your first... I mean, what is the Whirlwind? I'm not. I don't know that one at all.
Because you unhook me, I've got to go to the loo.
Right.
It's a twin-engined, single-seater fighter.
And what was it like? Because it's not a well-known plane, is it?
No, very... No. And highly manoeuvrable, built at the same time as the Spitz and the Hurricanes. But it never got anywhere.
Now, why do you think it didn't get anywhere?
Because it really was built to have two Rolls-Royce Merlins, to give it that extra bit of speed. It was quite good as it was. It could get to 15,000 feet quicker than the Spitz and the Hurricanes.
Well, what did it have instead then? Because it still had two engines. But
it had four cannons in the nose, the heaviest armed fighter that we had. Four cannons in the nose.
But what was it about the engines?
The engines, the Rolls-Royce Merlins, Rolls-Royce wouldn't supply Westlands with the Merlins, because if you've got two Rolls-Royce Merlins, you've got a Spitfire and a Hurricane, not just one Whirlwind.
So what engines did they use?
Perseus, I think.
Were they not as good then?
850 horsepower instead of 1,100 horsepower.
So that left them marginally underpowered from what they'd been designed for?
Yes.
But what were they like?
Delightful to fly. Very obedient. You had to learn to fly. If one engine got shot out, you could fly back on one engine. You had to learn how to fly back on one engine. Of course, the instructor... No, there wasn't that. There wasn't an instructor there, was there? You just cut one engine out.
It says single engine flying. Yeah. So what was it like flying single engine?
Well, you were turning a, like looking over there, and flying over there.
A big angle away.
Yes. And you had to be careful to turn, always turn into the good engine. If you went the other way, you'd powered spin. It's funny that Western have had such an argument with Rolls-Royce, I suppose, or the Air Ministry, about the engines, but it happened again when Michael Heseltine was...
Now tell me about the training flight. You seem to have done lots of training flights in June of 43. Anything you remember about the training flights?
In the Whirlwind, no, not very much about the actual flights, except that it was...
You seem to have done practice bombing. Did it have a bombing capability?
Well, I was going to say, Fighter Command was largely redundant because there was no enemy. There was nothing... We didn't want interceptor fighters anymore. So they fitted us up... We fitted the Whirlwind up with bombs under the wings, starting with 250-pound bombs, ending up with 500-pounders, which we delivered to France to their gun emplacements on the coast and that sort of thing. Well, they've been around a long time, but there was only two squadrons of them throughout the whole of the RAF. And
now, were you doing operational? You weren't doing operational flights till September.
No,
from the looks of things. Just looking at again, we're looking at convoy patrols first. But so lots of practice first.
Yes.
Anything you remember from the practice flights?
No, they are what they said they were. But they're trying to be useful by overflying convoys.
Well, let's talk about that then. So your first, I mean, they look like your first combat missions are on 23rd of August, a convoy patrol, and then again on the 25th. What was a convoy patrol like?
Convoys had to be protected from the marauding Germans. Who would attack such a slow-moving target. So we were up there to keep the Germans off as fighters.
Anything happened in either of those missions?
No.
So how long would you be able to be over the convoy? Presumably not that long.
Not more than an hour. No, none of the flights were long enough. You had to fly from Warmwell to the target, overfly it for a certain amount of time, and then fly back again.
Now tell me about the 9th of September, although it's smudge, it must be the 9th, it looks like anyway, you do a dive bombing on the guns at Hardelot. I don't know where Hardelot is, but that's France.
No, it's somewhere in France.
What do you remember that flight at all?
That was the first...
It says no thrills, is what you've written.
Yes, that's right. Well, it was a straightforward dive bombing exercise, but it wasn't an exercise, it was actually at the enemy. And...
What was it like? What do you remember about that flight and the attack?
Well, going to keeping a station while you got there, and then when it was your turn, you dived the aircraft, which gathered speed very quickly, and at the precise moment when you thought so, you pressed the button and the bombs were released. You didn't see them strike. You were too busy pulling out of the dive. And
did someone check later on? Was there a photographic reconnaissance to go with?
Oh yes, other members of the squadron would report. You know.
Do you remember whether you hit? Or you were told you were hit.
Whether I hit the target? No, I don't think we were told. I don't know how they would distinguish your bombs from somebody else's bomb, because you would attack in pairs.
And was there much counter battery there? I know there is at the next one, but it doesn't mention any.
What, anti-aircraft? Didn't notice any the first time.
And the next raid that looks at. Is dive bombing on Cherbourg, which I do know where it is.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That says very successfully. It also says first time with 500-pound bombs. That was on the 28th of October, so over a month later. Do you remember that at all?
I remember the target, but I don't... We didn't get to know much about the results of our raids for those things.
Do you remember the flak, though?
Oh, yes. Remember the flak.
What was it like in flak, dive bombing?
Well, I suppose it was meant to be off-putting. To put you up. To make a dive bombing attack, you've got to fly precisely in that dive and release the bombs at the right instant.
Does that mean you've got to fly down straight? You can't wiggle about?
That's it, yes. You want a 60-degree dive if you can manage it. The steeper the dive, the more accurate the bombs will be. And because there were not just one of you, there might be eight. For two lots of four, then there will be 16 bombs in the hope that at least one of them hit the target.
Now, did that mean you had to fly straight? Did that mean you ignored flak?
Yes, you did. You had to ignore it.
What did it look like coming towards you?
Just a...
Because these are daytime rays, aren't they?
Daytime rays, yes, they're all daytime. Flying along, and suddenly a big black ball appeared in front of you. Good Lord, what's that? You know, that took some time to think in, but... You couldn't do anything but fly through it, by which time all the danger was passed.
So in a sense, by the time you knew they were in danger, it had gone?
Yeah, it had gone, yes.
Anything else about the Cherbourg raid?
I don't think so.
Did the 500 bombs make you less manoeuvrable?
Oh, yes. In flight. Was there. That's an excess of weight compared with what we used to have.
So was it two 500?
Two 500s.
One on each wing?
One on each wing, yeah.
Now, there's an armed shipping recce reconnaissance over Cherbourg. Do you remember that?
Going to...
And it says George E. Wood back in England. So did someone get lost on that raid?
He was... the squadron was very busy going on these fairly short runs to France. And... attacking target, and on one of them George Wood was shot down, but we heard through the underground that he was safe. And as it turns out, it's because he was of the same shape and colouring as me, about the same size, a little taller, and we often got mixed up. We didn't get mixed up, other people mixed us up, you know. And that night, when he'd been shot down, I went into the mess and somebody said, "Good God, I thought you were dead." Because we didn't know then that he had been parachuted to safety. I don't know what actually went on in the whirlwind, but there's another fellow named Bill Watkins who again was shot down from a whirlwind, and the operational height would be 15,000 feet or something like that, and they didn't get out of their aircraft until 1,500 feet. So we don't know. We couldn't see. We didn't know that either had been.
So didn't George Heywood get back to England, or was it just him seeing you?
Was it George Heywood back in England? And that means he was shot down some time before.
And then he did come back, though.
Oh yes, he did come back, as did the other pilot, the Bill Watkins.
How did they get back?
Through the underground system. Through the underground. It was all very exciting. They could have one of them, I can't remember which one, was offered a seat on a boat that night to come back to England, or would you like to stay and help us? So he opted to stay behind and help us, and that involved helping the French to bomb railway lines and bridges and that sort of thing. That sort of thing. Very exciting.
Now, can we talk a bit about the squadron? And you were in B flight.
That's right.
And your commander B flight, flight commander, seems to have been someone called Handley. A. Handley. Do you remember him at all?
No. A. Handley is me.
Of course it is. That's forgetting with your Tom. But yeah,
oh, yes. Yeah.
Sorry, it's that's fooled me. Clooney? I can't read his writing. Do you remember the flight lieutenant commanding B flight? Who it was?
No, I can't remember distinctly now.
Well, what about the Baker? I can read that.
Oh, Baker's the
squadron leader.
He was the CO.
Well, just tell us about the officers you do remember. How did you get on with them?
Well, that was a silly part, because we were all the same when we were flying, and you couldn't tell who had a commission and who didn't have a commission. They should have separated aircrew out separately. And what else did you want to know?
I just wondered how you got on with them as sergeant pilots, with the officers, what they were like. And
they were all right, except when it came to eating and drinking. We had to go to our own mess. And they used to find it, the officers find it, as embarrassing as we did. Why couldn't we all eat together as a squadron? But it existed that way, and I did most of my operational flying as a sergeant.
Did you mix with them socially in the pub?
Oh yes, we're all the same there. All the same in the
pub.
So
was it first name terms?
Yes, with the officers we knew. Not with other officers, we didn't know them.